Accession number 28650, Mr. Gordon Meller, Reel 2. Now, this must have been a bit of a shock to you, and you hadn't been kitted out or anything. You were just as you were in civvies. Nothing had happened.
As were the other people, yes. No, I was vastly disappointed. I got my gear and stuff together from the hut, said cheerio to the odd person that I got to know over the last few days, and either some of them got away quicker than I did, or I got away before them. But I sort of went out of the main gate of Cardington, having been given directions of what to do, across the road, and waited for a bus to take me into central Bedford. I just couldn't believe it, but I should have done, I suppose, to a certain extent. But I must admit, I felt very lonely on my own there, and I got down to Bedford and took a train home, and that brought me into central London, and I came through on the Piccadilly line and got out at Alberton station, and I met my friend Ken's mother on the way coming up home, and she said, "How'd you get it?" And I said, "They chucked me out." I said, "I'm shattered." Anyhow, she said, "Well, perhaps it's all for the best. You never know." So I said, "Well, let's hope you're right, but I have my doubts." So I went back home and told my employers that I was back in their employ again. They'd given me a couple of days off to do this business at Cardington. Although in actual fact, if one had been accepted, then you're in, and you were then there and then for good. But I then returned to my normal life, and it was then, of course, later on that was the odd air raid and the like. There was a lot of noise of German engines, and the people said, they're not in synchronized, so they must be German, it's not one of ours. But I then hung around for a while, and all of a sudden these other papers, the calling up papers under the National Service Act, arrived. It was in, and I thought, right, well, here we go again. And again I had to report to
Acton. Now this is in June.
This was in June 40. So the time had slipped past. And I thought, I'm not going to say anything about the previous events. I'll just come in as a ordinary called up person. So again they said, "Where do you want to go into?" I said, "Royal Air Force." And they said, "Oh, all right." And again, I saw virtually the same people, medical people, in the Acton recruiting office, and again with their examination, they came up with A1, as far as I can make out, that's what they called it. I said nothing about having had albumin in your ear, but he said, "Oh, you've got a bit of albumin in your water there." I said, "Oh, yes, well, I had eggs for breakfast." He said, "Oh, well, that will explain it." And as far as I know, no note of it was made. And they said, "We'll send for you." And they did. They sent me to Uxbridge this time. And again, we had the educational business and the education, he sort of presented maps to me, and he said, "Which is north?" And he had a model airplane on the map. He said, "What direction is that pointing now?" And whichever it was, southwest or west or whatever it was, I told him. He said, "Oh, well, you're used to maps." I said, "Yes, I'm working for a surveyor." So he said, "Oh, well, that's all right, then you'll understand all this." And we passed on to general matters. And a couple of we had an eye test, and I've got a squint in my eye, I have a wonky eye, and in those days I could control it pretty well, and it slipped to the side on odd occasion, and the medical officer noticed it, but then he said, follow my finger around as they do, and I could follow it without any problem at all. And we went through the charts with the various coloured spots and picked out the figures which were indicated there, and I got 100% there. So 10 minutes later, I've been giving what the King's Shilling, whichever it was, and I was in with a number.
Now, were you at this point, what were you going to train as? Because we haven't mentioned this.
I was still on the navigation and observer line.
Who chose that? Did that choose? Why did you select the observer side?
Well, I did from the beginning on the first application papers.
What made you do that?
I suppose it was my general interest in maps and knowing where I was going. I was always keen on knowing that and, in quite detail. It seemed to just gradually build up with my work in the professions.
You weren't attracted, as so many young lads were, by the idea of being a pilot, you know. Or was it that you knew your eyesight?
I wasn't definitely against it, but I think possibly there might in the background be the fact that I would get in better with my eyesight. I didn't wear glasses. I had done as a child, but the eye tests were all very satisfactory, just that there was the odd occasion that the right eye slipped at the corner. And I thought, well, yes, if it's for a pilot, they may not be so keen. But I was really interested in the navigation part to come. So I pursued that particular theme.
Okay, that's just got, just drop that in there because I missed it before. Now, you'd passed your eye test, you were in, you got the King's Shilling, and this is RAF Uxbridge. What happens then?
Oh, well, there were several of us there in a room, and this officer came in and said, well, you're all now members of the RAF, but we have a job in fitting you in at the moment, despite the call for large numbers of people. You go home on deferred service. And he said, I can't tell you how long it will be, but you will hear from us. That was the gist of his approach. So we did. And I then waited a number of weeks. I'm not sure how long it was. It didn't seem long. And then suddenly a letter came which said, would you like to cut short the deferred service and assist us in an area which is important, and that is on ground defence, whilst you're waiting to be called for the training.
So this is before any training, any basic training,
yep,
drill or anything?
That's it. This was immediately, shortly afterwards, the being accepted at Uxbridge. And
so this would be about July. Didn't say in here, but
probably August. I can't recall what date we went in, but I said yes.
Now, where did that? What happened next?
I was called to Uxbridge, and there were a number of other people, all situation. They were in civvies. And there was the odd face which I recognised, which I had seen at Uxbridge in the last set of interviews and medical. And we were split up into groups and allocated to a sleeping dormitory, put it like that. And there was, 20 or more people. Beds were along the line of each room there, and we then sort of started the general introductory process of getting kitted out.
Now tell me about the kitting out. We're always interested in kitting out. How did they do it, and what did you get?
Oh, well, yes, we went into a warehouse, that's the best way, or a depository, and we lined up along a counter, and there was a number of airmen in the on the other side of the counter, and they brought us clothing, vests, pants, shirts. They asked us our sizes in many cases, so that they got as near as they could. And they piled the stuff up. There was all sorts of equipment. We were given, I'm not sure whether we got two uniforms or one now. We certainly got one tunic and a pair of trousers, and the tie and the shirt, the forage cap, overcoat, as near to the size as they could see. And
how close did they get with you?
Not bad, not bad. Anyhow, when we tried the overcoat on, and we tried the jacket on, and we took a chance on the trousers. Anyhow, we were then directed to another building, I think it was, where there were tailors there, and we each had put the uniform on, and he with his chalk was marking off where it had to be taken in or adjusted, and the same with the overcoat on top of the tunic. They sort of narrowed the shoulders if necessary, and they made very reasonable fit, I thought. And we left the stuff that had to be altered with them, with a tag on them to identify who they were for what. And we then sort of went back to the dormitory area and started other things like drill and a general introductory duties.
Now, what was your accommodation? We sort of take it, and then we'll look at a typical day's training. What were the huts like?
They weren't huts; they were permanent brick buildings. I think ground first and second floors. They were centrally heated, linoleum covered floors, and it shone like glass. Later, we found out how that was achieved. There was a bed, a single bed with proper mattress and pillows and what have, and five blankets, I suppose. Did we have sheets? Yeah, I think we had sheets. Aircrew always came lucky there. They had sheets, and that made it very much more comfortable to sleep in.
And how many to the room about?
I would say about, yes, what the number I mentioned before, about 20. Maybe it could have been as many as 24, perhaps. I was in a block called Mons at Uxbridge, and we stayed there approximately 2 weeks, in now which we were...
So that's where you got some very quick basic training.
Oh, yes, yes. Now, and yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, sort of...
Let's talk about that generally. What was the drill like? I mean, how did you take to drill? You'd never done it before, had you?
Oh, no. This was new. Well, the first thing was to get everybody walking in step. And that was not so easy. But the sergeants there were pretty well up in their training procedures. And even those who got to 3 feet seemed to manage to get in step before very long.
You and have any trouble?
No, I didn't find any problem with it at all. I took a quite long stride in any case, and I could keep in with the others. It was no problem.
Did you understand that then, or the point of drill, why you had to do it?
Well, I don't suppose I really did. I thought this was just a plain discipline to get people to work together. And probably that is the main point of the whole thing. You work as a team, which became more noticeable, of course, as far as we were concerned, because we were always going to be in a crew. We wouldn't be flying single-seaters or anything like that.
Any other parts of this basic training you do?
Well, we had another medical and of sorts, and then we also had the batch of inoculations and vaccination.
Now, how did that affect you? Because some people find... had a real effect.
I know it did. There was a chappie in our squad who I got to know rather well. We lined up, and there was a couple of doctors, and we went past these doctors, and one of them jabbed the needle in, to your arm with a hypodermic syringe attached. He squirted something into your arm. He then detached the cylinder part of it, leaving the needle dangling. We went along to the next chap, and he then sort of connected up and gave us another squirt. And then we got a scratch and the vaccination. By the time we got to the second application of through the needle, this chap I was getting to know, he just saw, and he was out. But he came, but they did it while he was out. And when he came round, it was done.
Any reaction other than fear, or it's psychological, isn't it? But any physical reaction to the inoculation?
Yes. I got a rather sore, a big scab and a sore, and it caused problems for a couple of weeks after that. But for the actual, that was the vaccination. But from the ordinary squirt in, then there was no reaction to mine, other than the fact it made the muscle ache. I'd had a number of blood tests before, so I wasn't particularly worried about it.
Now, what other sorts of training did you get there? It's only 2 weeks, but I mean, did they do PT, physical training?
Oh, yes, we had PT. We
kind of PT.
The usual thing: arm stretch, arm raised, running on the spot, and things like that. I'm not sure whether we played football or not.
Did they get you out route marching or running or?
No. The only time we went off the camp, we did a bit of running around, but nothing particularly arduous. It was just getting us used to doing it and obeying orders, I feel.
Were you introduced to any, I mean, you were going to be on a ground defence role. Were you introduced to the rifle or weapons or Lewis gun?
Not there.
So anything else you were training on there, other than drill and a bit of PT?
No.
What about?
I can't remember. There was the odd lecture, I think.
What were the lectures on?
I think on if there was a gas attack. I can't really remember much else. Probably a bit of general knowledge. We got an introduction to service law, regulations and what you could do and what you couldn't do. But beyond that, I think it was more physical than instructional.
Now, one part of army life is things that you did hint at it, is keeping your room clean and preparing for kit inspections.
Indeed.
Now, did you have a lot of that?
Not a lot, but we certainly had to keep the floor buffed every day, and so that we'd split up into groups, and some would do buffing of the floor, some would do the pre-sweeping and getting the dust and fluff out of it. Others would clean the windows and dust down the paintwork and what have you. So that it was became a group, perhaps four groups of six or five, doing the one sort of job. And then you'd probably swap it over on another day.
And what about your own personal kit? I mean, boots. Spend a lot of time inspecting that? Or
no, there wasn't a lot of time spent on that. We kept them clean. Bulling up didn't really happen there very much. We had clean buttons every day. You had to have a sort of shave every day, which was usual. Shoes and cleaned every day.
Just normal.
It was fairly normal. I didn't find it particularly onerous at all.
What about, it's your first experience of Army, RAF food. I mean, how did you find the food? It's your first time away from home, I presume, or? Any problems?
Not exactly.
Or did it not
complain? No, I didn't. I don't think the food was bad, awful, or anything like that. I thought it was fairly good. It was pretty reasonable sort of standard, I thought. I know it was cooked en masse, but I was growing, I was hungry, and I was prepared to take what they gave us. You had no choice.
Was there enough of it?
Oh, yes. Yes, there was enough of it, particularly on vegetables, greens, carrots, and potatoes. You could have virtually as much as you liked. the other meat and what have you, they had portions and that was it.
Now, how are you getting on with the other lads? I mean, you mentioned one that you were...
He was in the next one bed, a chap called John Wilkin. We became quite friendly, and at this point I can say that we were still friendly right up until a few years back when he died.
Now, were they the same? What type of lads were they? Were they from the same sort of background, class, and type as yourself? Difficult to say.
There was two of them, I think. This is the ones that were close to my bed, actually. It was two of them came from Wales. Young Phillips, and I can't remember the other chap's name. But they were quite soft-spoken youngsters. It all being new to them as well. We had a couple who had all been in OTC, presumably at good schools.
Any from the lower end of lower classes they could call them, but I mean, from work, you know, lads from poorer backgrounds. Or were you not aware of them?
It didn't really show. If they were, I know nothing about their home background. It was a varying accents where they came from, because as I say, there were two from Wales. And there was a couple of East End lads, or lived in the East of London, put it like that, Northerners. It was a very mixed cross-section.
And you tended to mix fairly well with the ones that were near you, that you met?
Yes. I mean, the ones on, you know, a couple of beds on either side or immediately opposite.
And no bullying?
No sign.
What about the instructors at this stage? I mean, you just have drill instructors, really, from the sound of it. But
we had sergeants and flight sergeants and the odd corporal to sort of march us round from one building to another.
And how did you find they treated you? What did you know?
Pretty reasonably, I would have thought. I mean, they obviously were experienced NCOs. It took quite a long time to get from aircraftsman second class up to a sergeant, let alone flight sergeant. A warrant officer, of course, was a rarefied being in those days. But, I thought they were all right.
And no, did they shout? I mean, was there much of this cartoon shouting business or?
Well, the voices were loud. If you were on the parade ground, then of course they shouted. They had to. If you were 60 or 70 yards or more away on the other side of the parade ground and they wanted you to come back, then you had to get the command to about turn. And that was quite loud. As far as the being in the barrack room was concerned, then there was an adjoining small room where there was usually a sergeant or certainly an NCO billeted. He had a room to himself. And when he came in the morning, it was sort of wakey-wakey, lads, in quite a sort of loudish voice. But then he had to make everybody in one room hear from one end to the other.
Now, anything else happening during this time at...
This is only a two-week period at Uxbridge, of course. No, there wasn't a great deal, which I would take note of. We got a notice that we were going to be posted. And we found that we were going to Bridgnorth. So everybody
in Shropshire.
In Shropshire, yes. So everybody who didn't know that particular area said, "Where the hell is Bridgnorth?" And John Wilkin, I've mentioned, he said, "Oh, it's up in Shropshire." He knew what it was all about because he had been working in the post office service, and he knew where many places were in the country which we'd never heard of, so he sort of gave us a rundown onto where it was, and he was able, of course, to do this on subsequent occasions. During that fortnight...
Would this be into September or back end of August?
Yeah, it'd be in September, I would say.
It's only roughly, you know.
Yes, now, yes. Right, the beginning of autumn, put it like that.
Was the whole draft going there, or just...
Well, there were six other barrack rooms in that block. I can't say we all went there at the same time. I don't know. But I would think all our room went to the Bridge North at the same time. We were beginning to grow, get into little cliques, I suppose, and there were six of us began to mingle a bit. So when we went down to West Drayton, we caught a train there, I think it was. And we all got into the same carriage together, the six of us, and that seemed to gel, that we sort of were becoming an item, so to speak, if you can put it like that. And I would say that stayed with us for a long time. The train journey up to Bridge North, a couple of 3 hours, I suppose. It wasn't particularly fast, but it was quite enjoyable. We were in separate compartments, and when we got to Bridge North, we all tumbled out there to be greeted as usual with NCOs, and we were carrying our own kit, of course. We had one kit bag, and the rest of it you wore. I don't think there was transport. I've got a feeling we had to walk up to the camp from Bridge North, where Bridge North is up on a hill, the town proper, but the railway station's down at the lower level where the river winds round the hill. So we formed up in threes, and I imagine we marched up as we'd been expected to perform back at Uxbridge. And this was a fairly longish walk, mile and a half anyhow, thereabouts, I would have thought. And we sort of swept into there, past the guard room, into this hutted encampment. They were in rows with concrete paths along the backs and fronts of them, and also in between. And we were taken or directed towards one hut for my particular lot. And there was quite a lot of us there as a whole, I would imagine. But we all got into this one hut, about the same size as the barrack rooms, perhaps slightly larger. And the six of us were together, and then there was a mixture of others there. But as far as I could make out, in the following days, then in their hut, they were all people training for observer. So that they were beginning to separate us out from the next hut. They were all flight mechanics, I think. But we were all AC2s, were all the same rank, so it didn't make any difference. And I think the people who were subsequently going to be gunners, I think they were in another hut. That's how it seemed become the rule.
So what happened? You've got there?
Yeah, this was a training and disciplinary camp. And it was, the square bashing in, all seriousness and other sort of duties which were put upon us. After the first few days, we had to do our period of guard duty.
Now, tell me about that. What was the process for guard duty? I don't know whether you had the old army stickman thing as well, but, I mean, what was guard duty?
Well, it was to get us, used. We used to be in pairs, and you'd if your particular block was on that sort of duty that day, then you would be on at 2 hours on and 2 hours off, or something of that basis. And you when you were on nights, then you were in a separate hut, and again you worked in pairs. We were supplied with a rifle, which had been issued to us shortly after arriving. No ammunition, of course. And you had a route to follow overnight. And as I say, you probably appeared on duty three times during the night. And the other ones, then you had a bed to lie on. We were supposed to challenge anybody who was moving about at night. So up to about 10 o'clock, then there was quite a lot of people about. And they got a bit fed up with being challenged by a variety of airmen, sort of training, but after midnight, then after 10 o'clock, then there was very few people about, and we were met across the odd officer to cater with, and on one particular attention, we stopped one bloke, and he didn't say anything, and there was enough light to see that he was an officer. He got the right sort of hat on, so we said we'll stop him. So we stopped him. He stood there, and whoever was with me, I don't know whether it was John or not, he issued the challenge, and he said who he was, and then he looked at me and he said, "Who are you guarding?" I said, "You." And he said, "Well, you're not pointing your rifle at me." So I got ticked off for that, but otherwise he was all right, and he sort of gave us a few words of advice and then went off.